With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
That's when, like, Kanye would roll through, or Lady Gaga's first show in LA ever was at my party, or like Skrillex would be there every single night.
Check.
I feel good too.
Yeah,
I feel good too.
I can do a podcast.
I think we could do a podcast.
Oh, look, they're bonding.
Well, I just like the vibe he's giving.
Yeah, you're cross-legged. You're crisscross applesauce in Steve's house.
Respect.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Impulsive, the number one podcast in the world. Thank you for listening, watching, viewing, and subscribing. If you're not subscribed, please hit that button for us. We have Steve Aoki in the house, in his house. We're in his house. Steve, welcome to Impulsive, yeah, brother.
Thank you.
Welcome to your basement.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
It's close or what?
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. You don't have to wear the headphones. I imagine you do that enough as a...
Oh, you know what? Let me try it out. I was trying to be free for that moment, but maybe
no,
could hear my okay. Yeah. So you can hear me up here. You know what? I'm gonna take the headphones off.
Maybe right. you have to get kind of like used to them. We're so used to them now.
It's like part of And you're staying on rent if you're doing that every show. You gotta
every show. Yeah. Your house is insane.
Thank you.
We've seen some crazy houses. We just went to Tony Robbins' house.
Oh wow!
Motivational strategist. Yeah. Crazy house.
But your house. Tell me, like, I'm, you know, first thing in my mind is what's the most unique thing in this house?
Has a slide that goes from his second floor to his basement, and I think it's like the only way to get there.
Yep.
It's a slide. And so you have to go down. He had to get permits approved.
Wow.
Tube slide.
Yeah.
There's no stairs or?
There's an elevator.
Yeah.
So technically, I guess you could take that down as well. But no, what it is I guess in Florida, you can't have basements because it's so wet there.
Yeah.
And they had to build this massive, like, submarine almost to house what he wanted to put in his basement, which is like bowling lanes, basketball courts, studios for his seminars so he can do them digitally. What else?
Yeah. I mean, he got a ping pong table, a pool table, a movie theater room, a kind of a lounge area like this. And yeah, dude, like I've been in your house for 5 minutes. And Mike has jumped three stories off into a pool. George's girlfriend, Belle, has done twists into your foam pit.
Very impressive, by the way.
She's very twisting. So many spins.
Yeah.
I can't help but have this burning desire to do mushrooms.
Acid, yeah.
And acid.
Yeah.
Especially in that one furry room.
Yeah. That's the perfect room to do it in, for sure. Because you could sprawl out on the floor. It's so soft and everything's so colorful already. So you're just like...
It's like
already kind of tripping.
Are you speaking from experience?
I don't even need a trip, man. Like, I'm already pretty high in life and high on everything else.
So. Aren't you sober? Like, full sober?
Yeah, I mean, sober is the wrong word for me because I don't, it's not like I have like a, I'm not like recovering or anything. Uh-huh. I did drink pretty heavily because of, I would just drink whenever I would DJ. And then there was 2000, that was a big turning point when I just was like, all right, I'm done drinking every show. And then that just led me I was like, okay, I'm pretty good. I never actually got into hard drugs. I tried, dabbled in weed very little, enough to try it enough where it just didn't do what it's supposed to do.
Yeah.
You know,
it feels exhausting, that life of constantly traveling and smoking and drinking. And I feel bad for most DJs because a lot of them get through it by partying. Mm-hmm. But like, did you have a catalyst that made you go cold turkey? Like, did something go horribly wrong?
Yeah, my very my very close friend, he was more of like a kind of like a bigger big brother to me. He passed away, and that really like tore me up. So it wasn't like he died of drinking per se. It was just for me, I just needed it was a complete reality check on everything. And like, you know, when you're DJing and you're like, I mean, in the beginning, when you're DJing smaller bars and clubs, it's like,
it's like you're partying. Mm. You know, when you're DJing concerts and bigger shows, you're putting on a show. But when you're in the club world, you're like kind of one with the crowd. Mm-hmm. So like if they're lit, like you're lit with them, you know what I mean? So it's kind of easy to like drink and party with them. And if that's your thing every night, you know, a couple years down the line, you're like, wow, I drank like, you know, I got drunk like 200 nights a year, you know, it's just a lot, you know what I mean? Like, so, you don't realize it until it catches up with you. And then at that moment I was like, well, I'm done. I'm just going to just stop. I'm just going to use this as like a kind of stopping point.
Yeah.
And like, for me, I feel lucky because I was never really addicted to it where I needed to drink. I just was always nervous before I went
for sure
to DJ. And it like helped me loosen up where I can just get crazy with it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Which I totally understand. It's liquid courage is what it is. And by the way, I'm sorry to hear about the loss of your friend. I did a horrible lead into that. It was way too lighthearted.
No. I mean, no. We're just casually talking about it. But like, you know, his name is DJ AM, and he's
of course.
Yeah. Oh.
And he's, you know, at that time, he was the pioneer for DJs. He was the aspirational goal of what DJs could do with their lives. And because before then, like DJs we'd make money, but not like that. We were like popular, but we were not celebrities. Mm. He was a celebrity. He was the first one to really make like some sizable amount of money from it. And he was also just a really kind, generous human being. Mm. So I was lucky just to be able to be in his presence and learn a lot from him. And it was just a sad story of him passing away. And, you know, I mean, since that turning point though, like it's clear my shows have changed. Mm. I've transformed as a human, you know, I learned how to like treat myself as an athlete mentally. And when you do that, then you start changing the things that are important in your life. Like for me, I care about longevity.
Yep.
I care about being able to play a lot of shows and, you know, performing at the highest caliber. So you have to stop certain things. You have to like, you know, just like you, like, you know, when you're in training mode, you're like, okay, these are the things that I have to do in the day. These are the priorities I have to make in order for me to excel at that level.
But it's so obvious for me, right? I'm a boxer. It's like, I have to do these things physically to be able to do the thing,
right?
The event, the fight. For you, one of the first things I remember someone telling me about you is how regimented you are with your health. And were you at one point on a vegan diet?
Yeah, I was vegan for 5 years, but that was probably the most unhealthy I've ever been in my life.
Oh shit. Yo, same story yo,
vegans,
as you.
Vegans, plug your ears.
No, I mean, I'm all about a vegan lifestyle, but like when I was vegan, I was not healthy. I was doing it for ethical reasons. Yeah. Like, you know, cause I didn't want to kill animals per se, but like I was eating like every carb on the plate, you know, like, and only carbs.
Yeah.
So, but I didn't really understand nutrition at that point. Till later in my life, I really dove into that space, and then, you know.
But now you do, right? I see the ice baths, I see the gym.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you're traveling as much as you are, even just like walking in your house, I took a picture of the world records.
Right
there. One of the world records here is the most traveled musician in 1 year is producer/DJ Steve Aoki, who clocked up 241.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
1,000 miles, performing a total of 168 shows around the world in 2012, which means you're on the road for more than half the year, going crazy at parties every night. And you can't have an unhealthy lifestyle. You have to treat your body like a
temple. No, you can't. I mean, it's not sustainable. You can't. You do it for a period of time, but then not only physically, you probably can't keep going, but mentally, it's like the fastest burnout. I think it's all really up here because I think your body could sustain a lot, you know, but it's like if you can't be motivated mentally, how are you going to keep pushing forward, you know, like, so, yeah, it's always about like remembering what, why you're doing what you're doing. Right. That's like the most important thing for me is like, okay, I love playing shows. I love making music. This is, I'm like so lucky to even do what I do and make the money that I make. Mm. And also I get to like travel the world and connect with so many different people. And the best part about it is like, I get to meet people without even having to say a word. Like, how cool is that? To connect with someone and there's no words exchanged. It's like the music is doing the connection. Mm. And then there is a real emotional connection being made.
Deeper yeah. than words. Have you ever related to someone's words more than you have like music has a way with people.
It's funny. It is the universal language. It makes you language. Feel.
Right. Yeah.
It's wild. It's
and,
crazy.
And it's like some people that song did like, it brings them back to a moment where something really pivotal happened or impactful happened in their life. And like they're able to express that moment right there. And I get to actually experience that. So that's like one of the most beautiful things that can happen is that when you know there's a real genuine experience with someone where they like went through a hard time in their life or breakup or some hardship. And I mean, we've all been there. We've all like had been through a down time and a song has just lifted us up where nothing else could do, you know? So, yeah, it's a very fortunate experience.
It's a sick byproduct of this world and this life you've built. But you mentioned it. What is the thing that keeps you going? Why did you first start in this music career? Because you also had an interesting childhood and upbringing where, I mean, not to speak for you, but when you have a father who did found Benihana, you know, like a perceived like really, really wealthy guy, I'm sure a lot of people grew up or thought that you grew up with a silver spoon in your mouth, but apparently that wasn't the case. And then here you are and you made this a whole other empire for yourself, which had to be awesome. But where did that fire first start? I want to make music. I want to be a DJ. When you even said it, being a DJ was not a thing.
Right.
That was a leap.
Yeah. That came in deeper in this evolution of music for me. Cause in the beginning, when I got into music, when I was in high school, I got into a small subset of a culture of this scene. It was like hardcore and punk music. So it was just a very, like in my high school in Newport Beach, there's only like a few kids that liked this kind of music. Mm. But at that time, I mean, Newport Beach where I grew up is 96% white. So if you're a minority or a person of color or just anywhere different, it's like, it's pronounced. And, I had a harder time making friends in the traditional way, making friends like through sports and whatnot. Mm. I tried it all and I just failed miserably. Like, you know, I was trying to play football and I was like 96 pounds and like, I was like benched the whole time. Whatever I try to do to fit in, you know, in the world. But it's like these kids that like they found their own little world. They kind of like let me in. And the way you do that is by making each other mixtapes.
Sick.
And like for me, I remember my first mixtape I got is kind of like a ticket to get into this culture. And I got this mixtape and I did not hear this music before. It's like really strange to hear someone screaming and like the music playing. You can't really understand what's going on. But when you can decipher the code, because it's kind of like that, when you can find out like the secret message that only a few people can understand, then you feel really cool. Mm. You know what I mean? Like I decipher the code. I know what they're saying. And it's like part of this little world that like you feel so special to be part of. Mm. And someone gave you this like secret, like little ticket to get in.
What bands was it? Like NoFX, MXPX, like Pennywise?
Yeah, I love those bands. Yeah. Like, cause I was a snowboarder too. Yeah. So I grew up with listening to all that stuff.
Right, right.
But it was more like Fugazi, Minor Threat, yeah. Gorilla Biscuits, which is like the first tattoo I got.
Wow.
Youth of Today, you know, like hardcore like that. And I learned all the lyrics like immediately. Mm. And then like, I came in like going, okay, I'm educated from this tape. I want to I'll prove it to you. And how you get your social points, your respect is by contributing. Like you get your social points by like walking in with like a fresh pair of Nikes. You get your social points by like, hey, I made a zine, guys. or like, you know, I don't know how to play an instrument, but I want to start a band. You guys want to create something. And that's how you got your cool points. So like, I would just start a band with some friends. We played horrible music in garages and backyard parties and made zines and put on shows.
What are zines?
Like a fanzine, like a magazine. Like, you know, we go to the copy center and like, you like write poetry and like typewriters and glue it on a piece of paper and then like take pictures at a show of a band and
throw those,
ask them like five questions. Hey, what, you know, and then put that in the zine. And it's like, you're creating the culture by spreading the culture, right?
Sick.
It's like your own little magazine.
Yes.
That you create yourself.
Printing the t-shirts. I was like silk screening t-shirts. So I learned how to do that. You know, I was doing that in my mom's closet, like 15.
So you found that is hustling. Yeah. Right? What is hustling like that today look like? Like, is it?
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like what I got from him saying that was he learned early about the art of adding value to other people's lives. Like you said, you're not going to get culture points for wearing the coolest shoes. Somebody might say that's cool for a second, but when you start to build, and you're obviously so freaking good at this, when you start to build a community of right. people, whether it's around music, whether it's around NFTs,
which is
obviously the biggest part of that game. You learn that at a very young age. You pick that up.
It's like about what you contribute.
Right.
Right. And learning that at a young age of why that's important to these people that I really cared about their respect. Mm. Like I care more about the respect than everyone else. You know, like I wanted to get their like nod of approval and build on that. Right. So taking that element and bringing that to college. And then that's when I started putting on shows in college in my living room. And we did like 200 shows in college while I was, you know, doing UCSB. I was putting on these shows and then graduated college. Then I moved to LA and that's where the DJ Steve Aoki was born.
Gotcha.
Cause I was in bands playing. I was like, by the time I was 21, I toured the US like 14 times in my little band playing in front of like 20 people.
Oh shit.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
What instrument?
I played guitar in one band. I played and sang in one band. I sang in another band.
Sick.
I played bass in a band. Sick. Like I was in so many bands, but like the biggest show we've ever played would be like 35 people, you know, damn. And living rooms and rooms like this.
You
like
had we'd no set up idea. Right here.
Did you have anybody from the past be like, dude, got to get the band together? You know what I mean? Like, right when he started killing it, dude, listen, man, I was thinking about you the other day.
Yeah. And like, I used to scream. So like, there's no way I'd do that anymore. Cause I ruined my voice because I didn't know how to sing, like
screamo music.
Yeah.
Oh my god! Did you ever get what are those things on your vocal
cords? Polyps.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got vocal cord surgery like 6-7 years ago, and during that time, I couldn't talk for 1 month.
Yeah, because they like have to like.
Yeah, they have to slice it. So you can't talk for 2 weeks before and 2 weeks after.
Oh my god!
So during that time, there was major breakthroughs for me. Because I had to like spend that time being totally quiet. It was just fucking crazy.
You did a vow of silence. An inverted
for a month. Yeah.
Well, that so sucks. Sitting here, I've just listened to you tell a few stories and each time was like at a low point and you're like, all right, what are we gonna do? Even when we were walking around and you were like during COVID, blah blah blah, and you just like build on times where you were either standing still or in like a little of a rut.
Right.
Like Newport was hard for you, but then you found a click that kinda moved you into this music industry. So you really make do for what you have, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah, exactly. And I like during that time, the vocal cord surgery time, that's when I was like, I really want to actually learn how to meditate, because I always toyed with it and I was doing it like on the fly. Mm. I'd listen to like the apps and stuff like that. So I hired a TM coach. She came over 2 hours a day for 2 weeks, and we would meditate, and she would kind of train and coach me and guide me. Mm. So I wouldn't, you know, because like the real thing is like the 2 week rule. If you do something every day for 2 weeks, mm-hmm. you start picking up a regimen. Like it's no longer like a tedious task.
Yep.
And I started doing that during that time. It's like, okay, so the 2 hours I'm spending with this coach is here. Then I want to get better at sound design. So I brought in some coaches that like work on music with me, just specifically on sound design, not making music. And I hired like a coach on language. So I just was like, I gotta really do this or else I'm gonna go crazy. I can't just play video games and like,
you know,
I hate wasted time. It's the worst. I'm sure you're the same way. I know you do so much shit, Logan. So
you know what I don't do? fucking meditate. I admire that. I admire that, bro. Dude, yeah. I've sounds very similar. Kind of played with it here and there, and I've come to the conclusion that it's probably not for me. But you got to coach, and having someone coach you and like hold your hand can be a game changer.
It is an absolute game changer, because if I didn't have that coach, I would have never meditated at the rate I'm doing now, which I feel like has created this balance for my crazy ass schedule in life, which has also led me down the path to think differently about like what mindfulness means. So, you know, like I would never probably gone into the ice bath regimen, or I would never got into like breath work daily, or I would never gone to certain things that I think are really valuable to my overall optimal life. You know,
you do an ice bath every day?
Well, I did during COVID. Now I'm like, it's harder. But during COVID, it was like,
oh, because you're not, he's not here.
Yeah. But I try to do like one, at least like now, like at the very least, I do like once a week.
Breath work every day?
This is all during COVID, man. Like, kind of lost a lot of that.
But certainly you have a routine now of stuff that keeps you grounded. Or, yeah. What is it? Anything stand out in particular? Your healthy diet?
Working out, meditation still. I still do that in the mornings.
Just how?
He's gotten good at it. Probably he's done.
You need a coach. I think that's like the best way for me to like, for someone like me, I need someone to train with.
No,
me.
No, you know, like, what
physically
I need,
or
I need vocal cord surgery. I'm going. And then I'll get the coach second. So I just got to start.
But you never know screaming. Because you, I know you push yourself really hard. I mean, cause you're a high caliber individual. You're always going to the like highest levels. There's going to be potentially a breaking point for you. And when that happens, you know,
I might be at it, dude. Like I'm kind of struggling right now, to be honest with you. Like I'm at the end of a bender. You know, I was just in LA for Super Bowl week. You hear my voice.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, tell them what happened today at the casino.
I won so much money. I can't believe it. Yeah, I don't.
Even when he's tired, he wins. He's exhausted. He's like, sorry, all these W's are exhausting on my back.
Nah, what's your game?
The guy crazy.
Dude, I love roulette.
But as of today, he loves roulette. When you were usually would sit and play blackjack with me.
It's just not. I love watching the little ball. Just going just circles. Spinning around.
You have any idea how pissed are you like a numbers guy or are you like a color?
I'm both. But the short answer is there's no strategy.
Yeah, like, just like, oh, okay, this number, boom.
Yeah, and I like it because you can apply a backstory to any decision that you make. And in your head, it's like, oh, it makes sense. And then if it hits on 12, you're like, I knew it was going to hit on 12 because in 2012, I graduated high school. Like, shut up. But I started with 10K. I'm at like 70K right now.
Oh, crazy. My God. Yeah, ran dude. It up.
Like, why would I ever do YouTube or Impulsive or anything ever again if I could just get rich at the casino?
Wow. So what, like, is there like a That's pattern? A great mindset. Is there a pattern you can share like on...
How he's having you, a very luck. He's having a lucky day today.
Yeah. So like he's numbers hit or the colors hit?
Both.
My last win, I hit 12, I hit even, and I hit red, all in one.
All
it was,
of them.
It was
all
like a, it was like a 30-40K win.
Oh my god,
it's crazy. You don't gamble?
Yeah, I live here.
I was gonna say
I live here. It's too dangerous for me.
You can't, right?
Yeah. I actually thought I had a system down, and I have this app on my phone that like tracks all my profits and losses. Just like if I treat it like a business, I'm thinking in my head, if I treat it like a business and I know how much I make or lose every time I leave the table,
yeah.
I'll have like a good judgment, right? So I actually, for a few years, I had this whole system down and I was up. I was up a lot. Like I never actually lost. I either was up or I was even. And the way I would do it is like, I play blackjack. That's my game.
Yep.
But when I play blackjack, I tend to lose 4 or 5 and then win 1. It's that bad. It's like you lose 4 or 5 or you win 1 or 2, and you lose 4 or 5, you win 1 or 2. Yeah.
That's four, like the four pattern. Or five hands in four a row and then row. 1 or 2. So all that matters is that the 1 or 2 that you're winning are the big ones.
Yes.
Got it.
So the way I go, I'm like, I already like, I know it's going to lose. So I'm like, I put the like my small initial bet table down, min. Right? Just knowing it's going to lose. Like, I'm like hoping it's going to lose. Like, okay, these 4 are going to lose. Yeah. Good. All right. The 5th one, I'm going to stack. And then
this is
stack,
an interesting strategy.
And then come back to the 1.
I've
you know?
Never.
It makes sense to me. I generally.
Well, how do you know?
It's a total guess. It's a guess on pattern. Like I like in my head, I'm like, I got this down because I was winning 2 years straight. And so obviously you go up and down, and sometimes you're obviously not right every time. But I thought that like I had the casino down. And then
I wonder how many people have said that before. So, I thought I got it down. So you're taking my home.
Yeah, the next year, I applied the same thing. I was like, all right, January, new year, new time, I'm ready to go. I'm up. And I tried the strategy, but I kept losing on my big presses. And then I would get my marker. I'm like, okay, I got to double because I got to make back the first because I never want to go leave the table negative.
Yeah, that's the thing.
And then I lost the second marker.
Yeah, yeah.
And I got to double the second and first marker.
Oh, man.
And then I'm like, I got to get back to even. And then I'm just like in this hole. And I'm like, okay, first start of the year, I'm just so down.
That's Mikey.
Well, how big are these markers, Steve?
Like I do $10,000 markers.
Okay, so you have like a bad, you might have a bad 50, 100K night.
Yeah, like the first one was a 50K loss.
Yeah.
Because I'm happy if I make like 2 to 10 grand. Like I'll do a $10,000 marker. If I'm up like 2 or 5, I don't need to sit at the table for like hours. I can be there for like 20 minutes.
See, that's my problem. That I can't leave. Even if I get a good stack going, I just like to play. I like to play the game. Like that's why I'm there doing it, because I thoroughly enjoy playing.
Maybe it's because you're with friends.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, we make fun of him a lot. We make sure he knows we don't love him.
He's by himself. Yeah. His arms are crossed at the table, and he just taps his knee. I'm up 60K. I have played a total of 15 minutes of roulette.
Oh, okay. You're smart.
Just in and out.
Yeah, exactly.
That is the way to do it.
Yeah,
that's
it
how
really
you do
is.
It. You get in, you get up,
three
you
different
get out.
Three different sessions. Each one's only 5 minutes.
Exactly. A
couple numbers.
Once you go up, like if you think in your head, because I think the human brain, we like always want to do more in our lives in general, right? So gambling is the same thing. It's like, okay, we got here. Now we can get here. You know, like it's always like that. That's why the casino has us on just the psychology of how we think, right?
So you don't gamble that much anymore?
I don't gamble at all. I don't really.
That's not entirely true, Mr. NFT.
here we go.
Okay, all right. In the casino, I don't really gamble. I play poker. I definitely, like, we'll get into NFTs for sure.
Your poker story is pretty cool. I read it in Dan's book.
Oh, okay. Oh, right. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's how I met Dan.
That was when I was reading his book. We had him on the podcast, and his views were like super different than mine. Like I was like, wow, we're not even looking at life the same way.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And so we got in like this little debate, and then we started talking on DMs, and I was like, fuck it, I'm gonna read his book. So he sent it to me, and bro, I read the whole book from cover to cover. It was such an amazing book. But your parts in it was like, fucking, I want to see that in movies. And
right, I know like, he's gonna kill me because I didn't read it, and he's like literally one of my best friends. I'm going to read it. Well, especially after you talked about it.
I'm blanking. How did y'all meet in the book?
We poker friends. I was a D-gen poker player in the 2000s. Yeah. Like I would play every time I would DJ. After I DJ at 2 a.m.
Oh, wow.
Like finish. I would be at Commerce Casino. I would be in some private poker room. I would be somewhere. Yeah. And then when I played in Vegas, I'd find myself in a poker room. And, you know, D-gens find D-gens. And he was a D-gen too.
Damn.
So like.
DJ, I'm using that from now on. We're talking to my girlfriend like that. Let's go, DJ.
Podcast is, bro. How do you think we found each other?
A bunch of DJs.
It's all hanging out.
We're all DJs.
Dude, I kept hearing DJ from Pierre. I was like, he's a DJ? I was like, when did Dan start DJing?
We're just a bunch of people.
Just nipples.
You know what? If Bill Zarian started DJing, that would be pretty epic. But you know what Bill Zarian would be DJing?
What?
All country music.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
Like literally all, I learned about country through him. Every time I'm with him, he's just fucking blasting country. Like,
you think country might be next up?
I think it is. I've been saying that.
Because we've seen, so, and you tell me your thoughts on this, because at maybe, what, 5-10 years ago, house music was the biggest thing in the world. Biggest thing in the world. It was the only thing anyone cared about. Now, once again, it's hip hop.
Yeah.
And hip hop and rap music leads the culture completely. Who knows how long that lasts for, right? But what's next?
Country is regional, though.
Yeah.
Country is very American.
Mm.
It's hard to translate that to, you know, global. Finland or to Australia or like to like China. Like, it's just harder. I think the thing is with electronic music is it like, just like you said, you guys were saying this, there is no language. Yeah. It's like
a tempo. Like feeling rhythm.
Yeah, exactly. It's a melody.
Country's like, more lyrics. You're right.
100%.
Yeah, it's like, and it's also very cultural. When I listen to country, like, so whenever I listen to something I don't understand, you know, when I was younger, the first thing I would be like, I don't like it. I don't understand. I don't like it. That's like the first thing I think all kids say.
100%.
But like now.
Hello, it is Ryan. And we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. I'm like, I'm a producer. I want to hear different shit. Mm. So I look at country the same way. I'm sitting in the boat with Dan, and all his friends are singing along to country. And there's, you know, like, okay, I hear about tractors. I hear about, like, drinking.
Budweiser's.
And like jeans. Broken hearts. And, like denim, you know.
So much
yeah,
denim.
And, like, yeah, cowboy boots and
pickup
denim.
Trucks.
And I'm like, wow, it's so cultural. And it's so important, like, to talk about, like,
dirt roads,
like farming and, like, you know, like, I mean, whatever it is, it's like,
it's just
like,
chores. It's a bunch of chores. They're just like, we're going to sing about what we're going to do this week.
Clearing brush.
But, like, yo, I started thinking about it too.
Yeah.
I was thinking about, like, I forgot what I was thinking about. I was like, about, like, riding a tractor. I was like, yo,
would you do it with an accent?
I think I was. I mean, you never know. Like yeah, everyone else doing it, you know. But
she thinks my tractor sexy is an actual song. Country music for me, because I grew up in Ohio, and a large portion of Ohio loves country music, and I do too. I have my bands that I really like, but they do an amazing country artists do an amazing job of like really appreciating the simple things in life,
right,
like the
right.
things that really matter, and they put it, a nice
it's
melody
cozy,
behind it.
To the heart.
It's cozy, bro. It's like. I don't know. It's they appreciate a lot of shit that maybe the East and West Coast folks don't. Like
right.
Californians, you know, I don't know if they're super pumped to sit around a fire and drive a pickup truck down a dirt road and pop a beer with your friends. Maybe.
It's their views. They're very
maybe.
Slow.
And it's really accessible. Like it's like anybody in that area, rural America, whatever you want to call it, they can access those emotions because they have a pickup truck. They
yeah,
have a,
yeah, exactly.
a, they have
yeah.
grass they can cut.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like they have all of those.
Don't you love it when lyrics really tend to you? Bro? Yeah. Go cut the grass. Yes, Dad.
No, but Luke Combs is the only artist that did I even say his name right?
Yeah,
I fuck, dude. I play his shit and I'm like locked in. But it's hard to move from country to something else. It's hard to go from like family, like way of living, and then it's like bad bitches getting.
Yeah,
it. It's
yeah.
like your brain
but
goes like, "Fuck it."
That's actually
you know
good,
what I mean?
That's actually a great transition for what I was gonna ask. So, how do you go from like E-Town Concrete to EDM? Like, how did you make that swap from screamo over to dance? Like, what did that look like?
The surgery.
Or electronic.
Before we get there,
yeah,
I can announce this here. I am doing a country collaboration.
Oh.
With yeah. Oliver Tree?
I love Oliver Tree.
Yes!
We
love that guy.
We love
Oliver. Who are you doing a collab with?
Kane Brown.
No way.
Oh, yes. We love
Dude,
him.
Dude, we love it. We
He's
love
a friend
Kane.
Of ours.
And it's got a fucking craziest harmonica solo.
Sick.
And the drop is fire.
Wow. Sick.
I can imagine some crazy like country sort of swinging dance to this shit.
Cool,
like,
dude. Kane is crushing
we love
right now.
Yeah, Kane. Yeah, he's been a good friend. We'll always drop in the zone.
Cool.
Yeah,
cool.
He loves Warzone. We play with
he's
him.
He's pretty good too. But yeah, it's a good. So I just want to announce that here because I haven't announced that. To
we love it.
Else.
We got Alpha. We got some.
Got the Alpha.
Yeah.
yeah. So when I was in like bands, that was a different time of my life. It's like I feel like my era. Like there's so many eras to my musical history. So I was in bands up until college, and when I moved to LA, I had to like mentally make the transition of trying to actually make money. So that's when I pivoted away from being in a band and supporting bands, and I really focused on my record label. And in order to do the record label and build culture in LA, through parties. So we threw Dimmack parties where bands would DJ and I would open, and I was literally opening the small bar and clubs. You know, like learning how to DJ on the spot, like literally, like I would go there 2 hours before and like drop, like, you know, play some of the vinyl I have back here and learn how to beat match and curate songs. And, you know, and then as like people are trickling in, they can hear me like struggling while I was DJing, you know, but I was really the party promoter. I was
yeah.
like throwing the parties.
Yeah. Dude, you have no problem taking the leap. Just like hearing this now, probably part of the reason you're so successful is it doesn't really sound like you're afraid to fail.
Yeah, I was failing. But the thing is, I was failing in the public, like, constantly. Like, I was like, you know, I don't think I was a very good singer. I don't think I was a very good musician. And I was playing in front of all these people. And it definitely wasn't a good DJ, especially in the beginning. I mean, now, like, maybe I'm all right. I've been doing it long enough. I just better be fucking decent. But in the beginning, I was total garbage. But it wasn't about me. That's the most important thing. It's about, like, the place. So as long as I brought in, like, a band that everyone wanted to see DJ and do it consistently, and then it grew into a culture. That's what's so great about L.A. is that L.A. is a hub of music. Mm. So as we're building our little scene in these little rooms, like, holding in the beginning, like, 50 people, we upgraded to a club space that held, like, 400. That's when, like, Kanye would roll through, or Lady Gaga's first show in LA ever was at my party, or, like, Skrillex would be there every single night, or, like, the rise of LMFAO during the early 2000s, and, like, Black Eyed Peas when they were reigning supreme. Like, I was lucky to even do a song with Will.i.am. Actually, that's an interesting story, because my very first single was with Will.i.am, and he was always coming to my party, and my party was the hottest thing for our little cultural little subset world. Yeah. Like, we are, like, underground culture, and there's, like, the Brent Bull House, like, you know, all the celebrities go to those parties in LA. But the Dim Mac parties were this undercurrent of music. Kid Cudi was always performing, MIA's first show, like, those kinds of artists. And Will.i.am was always there, because you had to be at these parties, because you couldn't, like, there's no social media. So you had to be at the club to hear what the fuck's going on in the undercurrent, right? And Will is always there. Will.i.am's always there. So I was like, hey, Will, can we do a record together? And he had no idea. I'd never done a record with anyone. But he just knew I was the guy throwing, like, the fucking sickest parties, bringing all this talent in. And I went in the studio with him, and I played him this beat that it was, you know, I mean, it's pretty good, actually. But it was, like, you know, pretty rudimentary. And he fucking loved it. And he was, like, singing, I'm in the house, like, in the control room on his BlackBerry.
Wow.
Yeah. And, like, and I got a mic out. I'm, like, trying to record him on the spot, because I'm like, if he knows this is my first song,
he's out.
He's definitely not going to do a record with me. So somehow I was able to finesse that, like, this record to come out, and it, like, did its thing. And then I told him later, like, yo, I just want you to know that was my first record ever done.
He's like, no, after.
And he's been my friend since. And every year, if I'm doing an album, he's, like, always supporting, and he's sick, always like, you know, doing a record with me.
Did that party also birth the beginning of you and Cudi's relationship? Because obviously Pursuit of Happiness was one of the craziest, you know, things ever. Is that, would you say that's your biggest?
That's my biggest remix for sure. Remix, one of my biggest, definitely one of my biggest tracks that I produced.
Yeah.
That the world knows for sure. It's like my closing song to this day.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the goal for any producer, to make a record that's timeless, you know. 2022, I made the thing in 2009, and it's still, like,
damn,
it still bangs, and people fucking go absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
But we did a tour together across the US. It was a Dim Mac Fool's Gold tour. A-Track, another DJ, has his label. He signed Kid Cudi, Day and Night, and he brought him out on this tour as his, like, the new artist.
Yep.
And it was Cudi's first tour. So we toured across the US together, and we became really close friends on that tour. And then he's like, hey, my next single is it's called Pursuit of Happiness with Ratatat and MGMT.
That's right.
And he's like, will you remix it? And we were already, like, really close. And I was like, of course. You know, I, like, pretty much did it for free. It was, like, very little money. I just did it. And then, you know, whenever you come to LA, he was always at my parties. I remember one party, we dropped the remix. It just came out, and he was singing. Literally, the room is so small. I swear to God, it's like this room might be bigger. It's that small.
Damn.
So we have a DJ booth on the floor, and there's a bunch of people here. So maybe like 60 people. And I dropped the remix for the first time. And he's like in his, like, when he gets in this, like, zone, he's such an artist. He's, like, so magical. He doesn't care about anything. And I dropped the remix, and he's, like, singing on the track. And he just starts giving away his jewelry. Like, right there. He's just like in this, like, Santa Claus spirit love, like, you know, he's in this moment. He just wants to like share this feeling. And he's just like handing his jewelry out to like people in the crowd. They're like, and the crowd is like, it's me to you, you know? So he's just like giving it to like me, giving it to you, Logan. Like you're right here. It's just only like a little pane of glass that's like separating us, you know? And people were just getting like whatever he's giving. It was like, damn. I'm like looking, oh my God, what the fuck's going on? He's, you know, it's just, it's actually like, it inspired me so much that it's not about like, it's about like following the feeling, you know? He followed like this magical feeling of us dropping this thing for the first time. We worked on this thing together.
Yeah.
I made like literally 60 versions of Pursuit of Happiness.
Did you
like,
know, did you know it was as good as it ended up being? Because obviously playing any unreleased track live for the first time is probably horrifying, but was there a reaction in that room when you played it that time? Or even from Cuddy, obviously you made him give away his things, which was notable. But did you know that the song was going to, you know, get over 500 million streams plus?
No, absolutely not. Actually, it was really great to do a record with him at that time because he was on the come up, but it didn't really blow up. It didn't blow up until after Project X.
Project X, yeah.
And that was 3 years after.
Yeah. Oh,
so
wow.
So it like was cool. It was definitely cool. Like, you know, I definitely played it out and I was like, oh man, this is the moment. You know, like you can't, it's undeniable when you hear that. You just like, you have to stop. You have to stop every conversation. Yeah, you have to like get into it. So like it did its job there. So it's an effective moment for the live. But I have effective records that are live that don't
go crazy.
Become, don't become popularized. I have a lot of those.
So interesting.
That one, for some reason, like after Project X came out, it gave it like this new lease of life. It like gave it a new set of legs.
It gave it a visual.
Yeah.
So you were able to attach.
Like, this is what you're supposed to be doing when this song is playing.
Exactly.
And yeah, it really was the pinnacle of that. Like, this is the ultimate party. And then they dropped it.
Yeah.
It was like a music video inside of the movie, you know? So yeah, that was a big moment for that.
When you look back to those parties, you look back to Cuddy and Lady Gaga and all that stuff and being in that, you know, super cultural, like, scene that you had curated, the entire environment, the entire experience. How does that compare to being at fucking Tomorrowland or like, you know, or at like Ultra and playing for Hunt? Like, which one, how do those compare and which one do you hold more dearly to your heart?
I mean, they're both so different.
Yeah.
And they're both totally meaningful. You know, like those parties at that early stage, there's the intimacy is like undeniable, you know, like when Lady Gaga performed, she performed on like a table with drinks. There's no stage. Like who gets to see that? She's like crowd surfing and like, you know, she's not worried about like, you know, like she's like still an upcoming star, you know? It's like though, like those kinds of moments you just can't experience ever again. I remember even like backtracking when I was putting on shows in Santa Barbara when I was in college. I had Jimmy Eat World, who was like, you know, everyone knows who Jimmy Eat World is. They were playing in my kitchen. They played in my kitchen in front of like 12 people, maybe 12 people. You know, they came and they slept on the couch because that's just what bands do. So it's just like to be part of those moments when you see something happening and you're part of that experience, it's so special. It's just a complete different feeling than, you know, then obviously, but playing Tomorrowland is like, that's like the goal. It's like, you know,
end game.
It's like, yeah, it's end game. It's like, but also you have to perform exceptional. You have to break through because, you know, there's hundreds and hundreds of DJs there.
Well, you do a great job of that. I mean, you have of the many things, the raft, right? You throw a raft into the crowd and I think I saw Dan Bilzerian doing the raft for the first time.
Yeah,
and the crowd, the cake.
Can we talk about this for a sec? Because I was going there too with the Cuddy giving out the jewelry, and somehow you transitioned that into throwing cakes at fans. And we watched a video compilation of it on the way over here in the car, and it looked like it started. I want to hear about how it started, but it seemed like it started with you kind of lobbing them. And when I see you do it now, you are fucking launching sheet cakes at people.
Yeah, you a sniper, dude. The distance you're covering on some of these throws,
You're left-handed.
Do you practice this?
Yeah, how did it start?
No, I have a cake-throwing target practice room.
Did I not say that? On the way here, I go, there's no way.
He's too good.
He's getting this on first tries. I could just picture you at home be like, where's the cakes? They're baking, sir. She threw all the other ones. They're like reloading.
No, I don't have one. But I mean, I should. But yeah, I mean, I've caked. Let's see. I started in 2011, and I've never broke below 200 shows. And I've broken over 300 shows, I think, for 3 years. So, and I was doing 10 cakes a show. So you could do the numbers. Like, I definitely caked over 20, 25,000.
How you even have to perform? That's so much cake.
Did you ever pull?
Well, it's only one song. So I made a song, like 2013, I made a song called Cake Face.
Okay.
Because before I would just like cake during Pursuit of Happiness or something.
Yeah.
And then when I made this song, that's when I was like, okay, 10 cakes a show. And during that song, I made it really long. It's like 4 minutes or something.
Okay.
So like,
you could just go for it.
Yeah, so then that's when I'm caking.
Yeah.
So I can't cake during the whole show. I also cake at the very, very end. So I save it like just like when you eat cake it for dessert.
Yep.
You have cake and for the very end of my show because it gets everywhere, you know, and I don't want it like tracking all over the place. I just want it to be the very finale, big finale of the show.
You ever seen the cake in real life?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I was in Ibiza once.
Logan.
Steve. Yeah, I think Logan, you launched a cake.
Oh yeah, we were fucking people up. Bro, Steve Aoki goes, "You want to cake someone?" I'm like, "I'm gonna kill someone with this." Like, yeah, I've seen you do it, dude. Dude, by the way, you know that show in Ibiza? I'd fully pulled my hamstring. That's why my leg was purple. Taped up. My whole leg was purple on the backside, like you.
Oh yeah, I think you're like talking about that. Well, I remember that
because I was in so much pain. But man, that universal music language thing we spoke about, I don't know what it was, but I forgot I was hurt.
Yeah, because you were stage diving. Remember, I turned back, or you're behind me at one point. Then all of a sudden, I turn around and you're just flying in the air,
dude. and then four times. Jake too. Both of us.
Yeah, you guys are both like the Paul brothers are just like out in the crowd.
Just imagine, bro, that people that don't really know you or hear this podcast get to know who you are just seeing you do stupid shit.
Yeah, flying, like literally. You did like I don't even know how you got that height because
it's like you're on
with two broken legs. Or too.
I have no idea. It must have been anyway. It wasn't that night. Well, it was any night. I've never done any type of drug.
I saw you do it at Shrine, I think, on the East Coast. And I'm from the East Coast, and a marquee obviously is a place you're at all the time. But what kind of cake? What's the optimal cake?
Okay,
for you to throw.
We actually this is actually really important. You know, like in the beginning, I was actually getting the cakes at the supermarket in the very beginning, because it was just so. And I was also traveling alone. You know. So it was different. I had to do everything myself. But now,
I love this question. I want to say, and I love the detail that you're like, yeah, Jesus.
And you're excited about that. He's excited about it.
No, okay, so we have a cake writer. So every artist has like the technical writer.
Yeah.
Okay, this is the DJ set that we want. These are speakers that we want. This is how the stage should look like. And then you have like the food writer.
Yep.
Like this is the stuff we want in the back with this alcohol or these drinks. And then, but for Steve Aoki, I got my own cake writer, and it's 6 pages long, and it's promoter's responsibility to make sure they adhere to the writer, because I'm launching these cakes, as you know, into people's faces. So no pun intended, the cake doesn't have much cake. It's like just like frosting and like just colors and just gets everywhere.
It's
explosive on impact. Like, these are special cakes.
Is that in the rider?
Yeah. It's like
explosive,
the
how to make, on impact.
Must be explosive cake or will not do show. Do you have any one story from caking that like stands out to the most? Like, is there one cake throw? Did you fall off the stage? Like, is there anything you really remember?
Was somebody allergic to cake and they're like, oh, man. They just started melting.
I think... One time, this is at Shrine in LA. I'm just trying to think of like times I got caked.
Oh yeah,
because that happened. So like one time, like Vin Diesel came out, and it was a big deal because you know it's Vin Diesel. He just barely makes a public appearance anywhere.
I've never seen him out.
Yeah, right. Right. So somehow I got him out. Like I got him out. He came to the show. I was like so surprised he came. And I'm like, hey, Vin, you want to cake someone? You know, like, so then I gave him the cake, and I thought he was going to cake the crowd, and he just turns around and just cakes me real, like all over. So that was kind of like a moment I won't forget for
you
sure.
You got caked by Vin Diesel. Yeah, I remember that too.
That's pretty epic. I got the photos to document that. His face is like, like full on, like
they use
like
that scene in the new Fast 10.
Yeah, yeah.
we should get into the topic at hand.
You said that today's a big day for you.
Yes. Yeah. Like, yeah. Yeah.
Tell us why.
Okay. So the Aokiverse launched. Sick. So what is Aokiverse? It's my NFT community membership.
Sick. Sick.
And I think a lot of people might look at like a fan club kind of situation, because you have all these perks of like getting to come to my shows, and you understand how that works. Like yep. the access that people can have to
yep.
you,
yep.
you've opened the door up. Right. But it's far greater than that. It's access to all my network, you know, in the NFT, in the metaverse space, and in the IRL. Mm. So, you know, from NFT allow lists and free mints to, you know, we're dropping a free Clone X, you know, to the membership. Whoa, we're actually dropping a few of them. I mean, it's a variety of things. Like it just opens it up.
The utility of the NFT, I think, is one of the coolest things about it. And as a fellow creator and a person who also has a thing coming up soon, it's really cool to see you kind of expanding what NFT is understood to be right now. You know, everyone thinks they're these fucking like little images.
Yeah, yeah.
The cartoons JPEGs, or whatever, yeah. Which is true.
Yeah.
But it's a sliver of what they're capable of.
Yeah.
And even just walking around your house, one of the things that you probably saw me get most excited about was your DJ booth with the green screen behind you for your live shows that you can essentially be performing wherever in the world in whatever metaverse. Like I would love on a Friday night, especially, man, say like, God forbid, another pandemic, some sort of global disaster.
Right.
And you just throw on your VR headset and I get to watch Steve Aoki with my friends who are in the metaverse and their avatars that are next to me, and we're just playing. And so the Aokiverse launched, you announced it today?
So the public sale just happened.
Okay.
We did like a few days ago, we had allow lists for NFT holders of various communities that supported us, like Doodles and Oni Force, Jinxie Squad, Adam Home Squad, a bunch of different communities. And now it's public. And what we're launching is, once you get in, you buy these credits that will burn into a passport.
Mm.
And the passport is what's exciting. So it's like a new dev that grows with you, because you can open up the passport and you have like stamps of like, oh, I was at 15 Aoki shows, and those are all stamped in the passport, and they can micro level up into your tiers, and there's different levels of what you can get in your membership.
How do you track who's at your shows? Do you show a QR code at one point on your show and you can scan it and it like is?
It's you. We're gonna token gate some of these shows.
Okay, sick.
So like that way you go through, once you're in there, then you get your, you know, it's like the way I look at it is like I collected all my ticket stubs of all my favorite shows I went to when I was a kid.
Yeah, yeah.
Flyers. Yep. Like now it's like you can have them on chain. And now it's like, you know, like all these shows that I'm talking about, they're legendary. Like when Lady Gaga performed, how cool it'd be to have that. Like I was there and it's on chain. It's forever here. And I was there. Like this is my, you know, participation. So not only that, but like being able to document all that, have it on chain and have it as like, you know, you can level up to these higher levels where you get different perks, different rewards, different access, free mints, whatnot.
What was the size of the mint?
So we did 25,000 credits.
Okay.
And there's and then you like, you know, obviously there's like we level them up by four. So first level is one credit. Then it's the second level is four credits. The third level is 16. The next level is 64, and it goes up.
Cool.
And you have obviously like the top tier is like, you got to come to my house. We're going to make a record, and we can actually make a record together and put it out to the world.
You know why? You know why it works is because you're an investor, collector, and NFT strategist yourself. Like you care. You know, you're in the space. You're collecting. I seen a picture of your doodle when I walked in.
Yeah.
And a mutant ape.
And a mutant ape. And I seen a thing you said recently is that you've made more money off NFTs than you have in your past six albums.
Yes.
Which is fascinating.
Yeah. It's true. So like, and that we haven't even touched NFT music, like music in NFTs.
Yeah.
And like what that will mean for artists and also fans having actual conversation, communication with artists, you know, having an influence, potential influence on the music or whatever offering that the artist can do. It's going to be a game changer, and it's going to upend the whole system of how things work right now. It's not going to take away Spotify. It's not going to take away record labels and management. It's not going to take away these things because they're all big parts of this piece. But just like how anything has changed, if you don't, you can't stop what's going to happen. So you might as well like move with it, right?
It's inevitable, yeah.
Yeah, so you can't be a label going, I'm just going to hoard everything and control everything. You're going to have to be like, I have to join them and help amplify the relationships that artists have with their fans.
Mm-hmm. Back to community. I mean,
exactly.
He said it here.
Democratization.
Yeah, 100%. And that's all it is. And NFTs thrive in that way. And I think when more musicians catch on that this is the inevitable future and your fans can participate and live and breathe this art with you, even like royalty shares on songs for some artists would be crazy.
Yeah,
like
right,
it's such a cool way to be able to pivot, adapt, and
funding all that stuff.
It makes me happy, man. I get so happy when people ask me, artists ask me questions about NFTs and they're curious. And even if they don't take that step right away, and I often am meeting with people and just planting seeds in their head.
Right.
Because I want to see this space evolve and we're so close.
I feel like what we're doing with this membership is something that hopefully other artists can take and use as inspiration because the dev is there. And like, you know, as we're growing, I mean, luckily we work with, to me, the best dev out there, Manifold. They did the Pox Pages to Poets.
Of course.
Mad Dog Jones. They did, like, they've done so much, you know, out of the box dev in NFTs. And this is definitely something very unique because it adds so much more than just a membership. There's so much token gating into live shows, into other NFT projects, connecting the interoperable, you know, communities all together. And so much, like, there's so many cool things that we're going to do exclusively. You know, whether it's like merchandise with different NFT projects.
When I saw your studio, which was my personal favorite room in the house thus far that I've seen, I mentioned to you, I was like, you should build this in the metaverse and have this be like a room or a hub, you know. And you mentioned something about Sandbox. Do you plan on integrating and doing an exact replica build out of like some of these real life rooms in your house in Web3?
This whole house is already, like, yeah, we've been working on with Sandbox since... you know, for like probably 4 or 5 months.
Sick.
Actually longer, maybe 6 months.
Dude.
On developing this house. I already saw like a rendition this morning and it's like this house on acid, steroids. Oh. It's this house magnified of what you could do in a Sandbox world. So,
that's so sick.
All of the above, you know.
How much land do you have there?
I got a ton of land. Where, a ton of land.
Is it all?
How much you got?
How much land do we have?
What?
Just say it out loud.
What?
16,
14, 4x4. Oh, you got a 4x4.
4x4.
Holy shit.
Oh, no. That's
shit.
And where is it? Yeah. Where is it by? 6x6.
Oh, no, so see, I thought you said like 24x24. That's a massive area.
It's a lot of land. And just one of those is Aoki's Playhouse.
Got it.
So we're developing all these other areas inside Sandbox, and it's right next to Snoop's. So we have Snoop's massive spot, and you have like then the Aoki's
cool
world. Yeah,
yeah.
You're doing something there.
I think we're gonna do something with Sandbox. We are. Well, I don't know if we can say. We're like finishing up a deal.
Yeah, yeah.
Ironically, they were the people that bought my World of Women.
Mm-hmm. Oh wow!
The Night Goddess, right?
Yeah, the Night Goddess for $735,000.
Yeah, I saw that. That's huge,
bro. Crazy.
Yeah,
but I met the guy who like actually made the purchase at the Bieber thing at this last
that's right.
Yeah, yeah. I met him
at Super Bowl weekend.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
He was just chilling. Yeah.
I was hammered. I climbed over a rail fence to say what's up.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, he bought it. I got to say hi to him.
He was with Shahidi and them. Cause I don't know what the hell they got going on. Cause those guys are, you know, they did.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Cards.
Yeah. I saw Shahidi at a Super Bowl,
yeah.
But yeah, what they're doing is incredible. I'm a big supporter of the Full Send project for sure.
Yeah.
I went. I already bought like I definitely, I just bought 15 more just recently.
I saw that.
Yeah.
You aped like crazy.
Yeah, I went. I mean, that's like with certain projects. The one thing I learned is never buy one. So for me, it's like if I'm going to invest, I need to buy more than one. I already made that mistake with the CryptoPunk. I bought a CryptoPunk for 50 ETH. And this is July of last year. And then I put it up for bid, just like 300 ETH.
Yeah.
And then it sold in 21 days.
Now you're out.
Which is great. I mean, it's $1 million, you know. So I was like, oh my God, I didn't
yeah, but realize. Now you got no CryptoPunk.
Yeah. So then I just bought two more. So I with all that profit, I just went and bought more NFTs because I'm such a believer in the space. And I also believe that it's like, for me, I don't really care so much about the flip. I care about what it's going to mean when we really start rolling out what Web3 is, what the metaverse will look like, what Roblox 3.0 is, all these things. I think that like there's so much application that's going to be used with NFTs that we haven't even begun to touch.
Scratch the surface. Just even the new play to earn stuff popping up. Like, I don't know if you got into Wolf Game or Creeps or any of that shit.
And Creeps, yeah.
What were your big, because I also have seen you on kind of the other side of some projects as well. Like, he kind of infamously got into Oni, Own One, whatever you want to call it.
I got in with you.
Mm-hmm.
I bought one Oni for 300, and like, I don't know what the value is, like dropped, diminished a lot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I got mine for like 630. And yeah, it's dropped.
But you know, I think about like this, like Oni is like an OG project to me.
Mm.
So even though it's dropped, still believer that the project will.
Yeah, I don't know why I don't feel like it's a loss yet. Like,
yes,
yeah,
exactly.
Technically, the project's volume has decreased, but like, I just don't care. I
look at like,
I don't know.
You have future projects that are really popular, like Azuki's really popular.
Huge, right?
And Zipsy, and all these projects that have like an anime kind of theme. Oni was like, to me, the OG anime.
And the coolest one. I got into one of the guys with the cheeseburger.
Right.
Dropped like 160K on it. And I noticed that it was like, I started to notice the floor was like kind of slipping a little. And I got a little worried and I got back out at what I got in for. And then a few days later, it kind of fell out a little bit.
I just still don't think it's cooked, man. Like, this is the long game.
Yeah.
And like, who knows? Maybe the anime NFTs are going to take a turn or take a skyrocket. Eventually.
Well, I mean, there's like a lot of projects, especially during that period of time, like World of Women. Like Dead Fellas, there's a lot of projects that they're rising now, but
it takes a while. Sometimes.
Yeah. And some of these take time. Like my project, I dropped February of last year, Dreamcatcher. I mean, the floor did drop after like everyone bought. Cause it did really well. It was like the kind of surge. I did 4.3 million on that project and it surged up and then it just dropped.
Yeah.
Like all NFTs dropped. And it just stayed at this very low floor for 10 months until we announced Aokiverse. Once we like whispered that an Aokiverse was coming, the floor rose like a lot from like 0.2 to, you know, 2 ETH.
So it's all the roadmap at the end of the day. It's hitting the right, you know, parts of the roadmap, because I think that's just a natural cyclical motion of an NFT project. You get this initial burst of energy when the project first releases, and then of course it's going to go back to some sort of, most times it goes back to some sort of baseline until there's news.
That's why for me, whenever I invest and whenever I look into projects, I always look at the founders.
Mm.
I think, you know, whatever you're doing, I'm going to be in on, because I trust you. I know Logan Paul, you're a visionary. You think ahead. You care about your community. You've already had proof of concept.
Mm.
You've already built that with Maverick. You've already built that with everything you've done. So like, since you've already done it, like, of course I'm going to follow whatever you do. It doesn't matter what you do. It's the same way I look at other businesses. I invest in restaurants with this guy. He's just like, hey, we're going to do this. I'm like, I'm in. You don't even need to tell me.
I agree. It's actually a macro takeaway. Every business that I get into now, first of it obviously has to make sense as a business, but the founder is you're my partner now. You're the person I'm believing in. You're the person I'm getting behind. Who are you? What the fuck are you made of?
Yeah.
And sometimes I believe these people more than I believe myself. And that's why I continue to do what I do. Bro, the CEO of this company, who doesn't call himself a CEO, he just calls himself an owner because he wants to like make it all equal,
yeah,
is a dog. He's our secret weapon. You know, like, this guy's on his shit. And he inspires me every day to just continue pushing and making this the biggest, best thing ever. Which, by the way,
I haven't tried this yet. So.
He opened it. He had it splashing into his mouth. To. He was so excited. And I said, Steve, could you please just wait and try it on the show so we can get your reaction? So
okay, here we go. My first sip of Prime. I've been seeing it online everywhere. I've been excited. I saw that monkey stole your Prime.
Can't believe it.
I was like, I need to try this Prime now.
it's in demand.
The monkey like spurred a lot of attention.
That's why they're called Prime.
Right, here we go. Bottoms up. Wow. You know, grape is like one of my favorite flavors too. This is like, it's a good grape. This is really good.
It's a good grape, dude. Cold grape is my personal favorite. Cold grape, for those of you listening at home. Make it Prime grape cold.
I know, I'm a fan.
Thanks, bro.
It's really good.
It's also good
really
for
good.
You.
It's really good.
Very good for you. That's the secret as well. Like 2 grams of sugar in that, 25 calories. Yeah.
I'm surprised by that.
Me too.
Try that. How to do the lab, all the scientists cooking up.
I believe some sort of alchemy took place, but yeah. I'm glad you like it. But yes, the point is this. Believe and do research in your founders.
Yeah.
Your founders.
It's always about the people, not the business. I always believe in the people first. Like just like you're saying. It's like we talk about John Shahidi, Full Send. They have an incredible community and they do a lot for the community. So I support them. Takashi Murakami, Clonex. I'm a Murakami fanboy. Yeah. I know him personally as a friend of mine. I'm a collector. Mm. So I went in on Clonex.
Dude, I missed that one, and it was probably my biggest miss because Banks had told me this is locked, guaranteed. And the vials, I think they minted at three
yeah.
ETH,
yeah, yeah,
something
right.
like that, and I didn't get any. And God, within a day of it going live, I was like, I fucked up real bad. How many did you end up buying?
I don't know. Matt, how many do I have? Matt. 4 or 5. Oh, that's not enough either.
Did you get any of the crazy ones?
I got one. I spent like on the mint. After the mint, I bought one for 20 ETH. So it was a rare. I need to follow up on what that rare is. The blindfolded dude.
My buddy minted the split face, the Murakami, the actual Murakami.
Oh my God.
Ended up selling it for, I think moved it for 100 ETH, thinking that he had this massive come up at like, what is that? Like 350,000, whatever it is, yeah. right? And the next day, somebody had listed it for like 300, 400 ETH.
Wow. That's insane.
That project's crazy. You guys can see
this art right here? I don't know if you can see
it. Yeah.
But like, that's Virgil Abloh, rest in peace, Murakami collaboration.
Insane.
There's only two of these flower powers. This is, to me, ghost status, and obviously Murakami Doraemon.
Sick.
Yeah.
So cool, man. I think there's going to be so many cool advancements in the space, and... It's awesome to see you leading the helm.
Thank you.
For real, bro. Thank you. Also, I want to come to another show soon.
And we got to do a collaboration, too. Whenever you drop yours.
Oh, my God, we should.
Like Aoki Verse and whatever your project's called.
I have some ideas. I have some ideas. Yeah. I'll tell you. But we do have to go. We have to catch Absinthe tonight, the show.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that's definitely one of the best shows on this trip.
That's what we're hearing.
All right, cool.
I don't know what it is yet. No one can really tell me exactly what it is. They're like, it's a comedy show, but you got to get made fun of and don't sit in the first row.
That's what I told
you. Like, that's just all what Mike told you.
No, I believe that.
It's super funny.
He said it just like that.
But like, super talented. Like the people, like the actual.
George got the hookup.
Yeah. I've already gone twice.
It's so good.
It's incredible.
So they invited me to go watch it, and I just got into stand up. So live performance to me now, I see it differently.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, fuck, these people have to practice this and hope. Right. And the craziest part is this guy better not fuck up for everybody else that's doing this shit. Yeah.
Right.
And there's acrobatic stuff. Yeah. There's all this stuff. So when I was watching, I was like, these are probably the greatest performers that were. Like gonna see, and they're just on Vegas, and nobody's.
Well, they're
really
also right here. Like the room is really small.
It's intimate, it's like this.
That's why I said in the front row, you get shit on you.
Do you see what I'm saying? Look how he described
it. Wait till you see the two roller skating. It's the brother and sister duo.
That's the craziest.
That is the craziest thing you'll ever see.
Hey,
the craziest thing you'll ever see.
Oh,
in your
dude, like
sick.
She's like hanging, like upside down.
Steve.
In here, and she's just like flying.
Steve, you were blowing it,
bro. It's not like a spoiler alert. Who cares?
He painted it. What are you gonna tell him the color of her dress?
No. Dude,
Steve, go ahead. Tell him the color of her dress.
Be like,
Like,
yeah. I want that. I want to be like that.
And like the roller skates, if no matter how close they might be like right in front of you.
Steve, I am never telling you a secret a day of my life.
Steve, thanks for coming on Impulsive, bro.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. This is great.
Of course,
thanks,
guys. Go to his shows, buy his NFTs, follow him on Instagram, A-O-Converse. All the things. Thank you for listening to this episode of Impulsive. We'll see you next time. Take it easy. Peace.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.